This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Glad you can be with us here on a throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Filling in for Jake Asman today. Coming up this hour, what would have happened if the Phoenix Suns had won last night? How would the NBA be reacting today? It's a big what if because it didn't happen. Milwaukee now has evened up the series at two games apiece. But last night, and if you watched the game and saw the Devin Booker no-call foul that would have been his sixth with about 3.5 minutes left to go in the game, if Phoenix had gone on to win that game, how would the NBA be reacting today? Would they blow it off, or would they be making statements on exactly what took place in the referees' minds of that game? And also Chris Middleton. We've been wondering about Giannis putting a team around him, right? Would they need another superstar if they want to continue to win some championships? Is Chris Middleton that guy after a 40-point performance last night and helping Milwaukee with that win last night by 6 points, a 109-103 victory? We'll talk about that. Gabe Lax is going to join us. We'll talk about the second half of the baseball season, what you can expect, and some key injuries, and also some teams that are playing on a level we didn't anticipate seeing before. So we'll get his thoughts on that as well. But it is a throwback Thursday, and we will have that for you coming up as well. We've got the British Open going on at Royal St. George's. Right now, Jordan Spieth is the leader at 5 under par, playing fantastic golf on a course that has not really opened itself up to the weather. It's been pretty even right now in terms of the wind. You had some gusts, but it hasn't been tearing Royal St. George's to pieces. Maybe it comes by this weekend. Right now, it looks like scoring is actually easy to get by in Jordan Spieth, who won this thing not that long ago, 2017. And we talk about a slump, but Spieth is a former Open champion within the 5-year window. But he's right now at 5 under par. And when he has a putter going, you won't find anybody better. So we'll give you an update throughout the show on the British Open as we continue. But coming up next, Game 4, Milwaukee has evened up the series. They have done an exceptional job with the two games at home. Giannis getting 42, and then last night, Chris Middleton getting 40. So they don't need Giannis to get 40 and 10 to beat the Phoenix Suns. But what about that non-call, and what would the NBA be doing about it? And how much of a problem would it have been if Phoenix had won that game? We'll talk about that next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
It's a throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
This is Throwback Thursday, and if you've not heard us do this before, well, it's Throwback Thursday. Today, 1988, Bruce Willis and Die Hard made its theatrical debut. Christmas movie of the year.
Yes.
But also, this is Robert Palmer.
Like I said, every boy's favorite video growing up.
It was it had four women that looked exactly the same.
Yeah,
in his band.
Was it four? I thought it was like 16.
Three? Or, well, I don't know. I can't remember.
I'm just looking at the behind them. They were all dressed the same, shaking them hips.
Yeah.
Bending over ever so slightly.
That's right. This was a big hit in the day, too.
Yeah. Terrible song.
Taking me back to my high school days, man. A lot of these songs were terrible. But still, it was the 80s. What do you want? It was great. A lot of one-hit wonders. But Robert Palmer wasn't. He was a star musician at the time. So
I thought everyone should dress this way. Black, you know, have your hairs black, slicked back all the way to, like, it looks like it hurts.
Yeah.
With bright red lipstick.
That's right. Exactly.
And I still think it's, I was watching the video this morning. The way there's like four of them dancing. They have their arms around each other, moving their hips. It looks unnatural.
Yeah. Cool. Remember when videos were a real thing? You'd get a director, you'd come up with something, you'd come, I don't know if they still do that, but I don't see videos anymore.
Let's just age ourselves. That's back when MTV was actually MTV. The M stood for music.
That's right, music television.
Not ridiculousness.
Exactly. No. I know they still make videos today, but I don't know how much they're a big deal.
I think they go straight to YouTube.
They go straight to YouTube.
I mean, we would waste a whole afternoon.
Yeah.
just sitting there just watching one video after another, hoping our favorite would come on.
And then when they would debut a video, Michael Jackson was coming out with a new video, it was a big deal. They would say, 8 o'clock Eastern time, we are going to have the latest video from... And you'd be excited because you wanted to see it.
Even it was appointment watching.
Appointment watching, exactly. Last night, game 4. Now, I want to say Etan Shander made a very good point. It comes on after this show. He made a very good point yesterday on Twitter. I got to bring up. Last night's game should have been the most watched sporting event of the year.
Saw that. I saw that as well.
And he makes a very good point. And I'm glad he made it because I didn't connect the dots like I should have. We have complained for decades that the day after the All-Star game is the worst day on the calendar because traditionally nothing goes on.
No sports.
Nothing is going on. That's when the ESPYs used to happen. Remember? I don't know if they still do. They had them this past weekend. So they used to just fill that gap because nothing was happening. And it was like that forever. Now, Major League Baseball's All-Star break used to be 3 days, right? It used to be. Now it's a little bit longer. But it kind of still is because the Yankees and the Red Sox are playing tonight and then everybody else plays Friday.
But still, the day after the All-Star game, there was nothing.
Dead calendar. So now, through the quirkiness of the COVID schedule, we get game 4 of the NBA, a critical game in the NBA Finals. It should have been the most watched thing on television.
Yes.
And I don't know if it was. We'll see. However... Let's say it was. Let's say the numbers for game 4 were really good. The casual, I'm okay with this. I'll watch some
flip
NBA.
It to the
Why
channels,
not?
Land on it.
I may not be the biggest NBA fan, right? That guy.
And
right?
There's no excuse, too, because it wasn't on a cable channel. It was on ABC.
Right. It was on ABC.
So everyone has that one.
So now you get it, and you watch last night, and Devin Booker commits his 6th foul blatantly, and it wasn't called.
Was that a 6th or 7th? I can't remember.
It would have been a 6th. No, 7th. What was a 6th? No, 7th. It would have been a 7th. I'm sorry. A 7th. Sorry. So he would have been disqualified.
Yeah.
So he would have gotten his...
With 3.5 minutes to play.
Yeah, with 3.5 minutes to play, he would have fouled out of the game. And if Phoenix, who later on in the game had a chance to take the lead with a minute to go until Chris Paul slipped and lost the basketball, if they had gone to win that game... Especially if Devin Booker had participated in the winning of that game, what would we be talking about today?
Yep.
How many people would have said, that's enough. I am on the periphery. I'm not inside the NBA fandom. And all I keep hearing about how the NBA does this and the NBA does that and they manipulate games. True, untrue. It's mostly untrue, but nevertheless, perception can dictate some reality for you. Wouldn't that be driving Adam Silver crazy this morning to say, guys, referee crew, you guys have got to do a better job than this?
I mean, I think heads would roll.
I do, too.
If the outcome came to what we're saying, Devin Booker's in there, he's instrumental in the final play, maybe he takes the winning shot. And that's what we're left with. And let's also assume that all of America joined us last night and said, there's nothing on TV. I'm going to watch basketball.
And I'll tape Crime Scene Kitchen. I'll watch basketball.
Yeah.
Right. What would the NBA be doing today? How would they be addressing
the spin?
You don't ever want to, as a league, you don't want to sort of admit your failures, right? You don't want to put this crew under the bus. You want to sort of give out the impression that they're doing the best job they can. Sometimes they make them, sometimes they miss them. All right, it's a tough job. But in this particular case, if you're Adam Silver and the Suns had a 3-1 lead, and Devin Booker should have been out of that game at the 3:41 mark, and instead you are dealing with a public that's going, well, this series is over, and by the way, we'll never forget why. Right? That's a problem for you. You don't want referees, umpires, officials, anybody dictating any part of the game in that regard, right? That's a problem. That could have been a problem last night. That is why I was actively at the 3:41 mark started going, all right, Milwaukee's got to win this game. I don't want it marred. I don't want games marred by officiating. I hate it. We still talk about the NFC Championship game between the Rams and the Saints to this day.
To this day.
To this day, we still talk about it.
And we will. Right? I don't think we'll never stop talking about that one.
we still talk about the blown call. Some people still talk about the blown call in the 85 World Series at first base with this between the Cardinals and the Royals. There's always one or two of these that can affect the outcome of a larger top. Hey, look, if a referee blows a game between two lousy football teams, we don't remember it. But if it affects a playoff team, if it affects a playoff game, if it affects a way that a team is trending, then we remember it. And we have a tendency to not forget it. If you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan and they lost that series, because let's say Phoenix won that game and then wrapped it up in five, you would live with the rest of your life never forgetting that. Never forgetting that Devin Booker should have been out of that game. The key guy that was scoring the majority of the points for the Phoenix Suns should have been out of that game at 3:41. And I'm glad Milwaukee held on. I'm glad Milwaukee was able to win
that
game. Go
on that run. Glad they were finally able to make some shots.
I was glad last night. Yeah, I know. I was glad last night that we got a competitive game in this series. That was a great fourth quarter.
Well, I mean, you know, think about the whole game. Milwaukee's up for a little bit, and you're looking like, okay, this game's kind of getting away. Then Phoenix comes back, and then they take almost a double-digit lead. And you're like, okay, you know, now it's getting out of hand again. But it was, I mean, it was just kept going back and forth until that fourth quarter, which was, hey, you got to be paying attention right now.
They outscored Phoenix by 12 points in the fourth quarter. And they did so with rebounding and forcing turnovers.
Yeah.
Because you're right. They didn't shoot very well. Phoenix actually did. Phoenix shot over 50% for the game, but they turned the ball over too many times. But 17 is a lot.
And, you know, I know you're saying they outscored him by 12 points. Take six of those points and throw it out the window because that was at the end of the game.
Right. Once they had control of the game, they controlled
it. Yeah, it was Phoenix throwing up shots, hoping and praying, missing, Milwaukee making theirs, or fouls but happening.
You had the Giannis block, which is going to be one of the most iconic images of this series. Even if Milwaukee loses, it's still one of those moments where you go, wow, this is a great basketball play. It's a smart play. The way he was able to sort of decipher in a very split second where this play was going and being ready to make that switch to go from Devin Booker, who was driving, back to DeAndre Ayton, who was behind him, so that he could make sure he blocked that alley-oop attempt.
And if Milwaukee wins, that's the reason.
Right.
That's the catalyst. The turning point of the series.
We know Giannis is a superstar in this league, right? But there's an extra level superstars usually take to get to the even higher tier, which is sort of part of the sort of public, you know, public domain, right? Like, you know, Steph Curry is famous. He's a basketball player, but then he's producing TV shows. Like, there's an extra level you can go. LeBron is an NBA superstar, but he's in Space Jam. He's, you know, it's there. There's an extra level that superstars go to. Kevin Durant made a movie, right? I mean, Giannis is about ready to take that. I mean, he's about ready to take that. There's no question in the league he's a superstar. There's no question about that. But does he become that extra level?
That next level.
He's recognizable and people know who he is who very, if rarely, if at all, pay attention to the NBA. Does he transcend that? Does he go beyond that?
Is he going to put Milwaukee on the map?
Right, exactly. He could be on the way. The guy, though, that it was so impressive last night was Chris Middleton.
I can't get enough of him right now.
Can't get enough of him right now. And again, for all of the sort of speculation that Giannis really needs another pairing of a superstar, not just a very good player, which a lot of people looked at Chris Middleton, you could make the case that he's got the right guy next to him, a guy that works well with him, a guy that's been around his entire NBA career, who's been in Milwaukee with him since the early days, and who they just like playing with each other. That's you could make that case based on a performance last night of the 40-point effort that he put out for the Bucks to tie up this series. Interesting where we'll go Saturday. Right now it's all home team. It's home team, but Milwaukee has made the right adjustments, and we'll see if they can steal one in Phoenix and go back to Milwaukee with a chance to close it out, or if Phoenix wins and they got to go to Milwaukee to try to close it out. Who knows? Or we get a game seven. But we do know this. We're getting at least six. We're not getting five. We're at least getting six in these NBA finals. All right, coming up, an interesting NFL debate in my home city of Nashville that's got a lot of people talking, and I'll extend it out nationally. It could affect your team if you are the recipient of a team from another city. That's next as we continue on Wake Up Call.
I want to know what you're thinking. There are some things you can't hide. I want to know what you're feeling. Tell me what's on your mind.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, Superstart Batteries exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts, designed to meet the electrical demands of today's vehicles. Get dependable power and performance from a Superstart battery for your car, truck, motorcycle, lawnmower, boat, and more. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts today, and the professional parts people can help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Throwback Thursday, 1988. The music from that time, because Bruce Willis and Die Hard made its theatrical debut on this date. What's the math? 33 years ago?
That yep.
Yeah. Listen to me doing math on the top of my head. My God. Thank you.
Quick. Painless.
Yep.
Or painful. I don't know.
I know. So there you go. Big story here in Nashville that actually affects you in Houston.
What?
Ron Culver, listen to this. So yesterday, the Tennessee Titans announced a number of members to their Ring of Fame, including Floyd Reese, including Jeff Fisher, who led the team to the Super Bowl, and also Bum Phillips.
Whoa!
Is getting into the Ring of Fame for the Tennessee Titans because they were once the Houston Oilers. Not only were they the Houston Oilers, but unlike Baltimore, who decided to give up all of the history of the Cleveland Browns when they moved to Baltimore and let Cleveland have it, so when the expansion team came, they said, you know what? This is part of your city. We don't really need it. You take it. Take Jim Brown. Take Otto Graham. Take Brian Sipe. Take Ozzie Newsome, although we'll keep him as GM for a little bit. But you take the history, and you put it as part of your team. That's what they did. When they moved, when the NFL announced that Cleveland get an expansion team, Baltimore gave them their history back. The Titans did not do this. The Adams family did not do this. This is why when the Texans became in existence, they could not be called the Oilers, because the Tennessee Titans and the Adams family said, nope, we have it. That's part of our family. That's part of our team. And we moved to Nashville. We are keeping all of it. Earl Campbell, Dan Pastorini, all of that stuff from the Houston Oilers days, the Love You Blue era. We're keeping it. It's part of our history. And likewise, when they announced the Ring of Fame, Bum Phillips, who never coached in Nashville or the 1 year in Memphis. In fact, not only that, but was pretty much years away when he got fired in 1980. He was years off the radar from the team moving to Tennessee. But he's going to be in the franchise's Ring of Fame.
I don't know about that.
I don't either. And I'll tell you this. There's a two-way battle here in the media about this. One is the admission that it is the franchise, that in the end it's the franchise. What are you going to do? This is the Adams family's team. This is Amy Adams Strunk owns the team, daughter of Bud Adams, who owned the team, passed away. This is his team. This is his franchise. It's part of their family history. Yes, they moved the team, but they own it all. They own it all. So, yep, they're going to put him in because he did work for the franchise, the organization, even if they're in a different city. But it has no connection to people in Tennessee at all. No connection to people in Nashville. In fact, nothing does from the old Oilers era. No, nobody in Tennessee can say they were rooting for Earl Campbell back in the day, and they're just so glad the Oilers became the Titans. And this has bothered people here, but I know it's infuriating people in Houston that Bum Phillips would get honored by a team that a family that took the team away from the city. Look, it wasn't like Bud Adams was like, yeah, don't worry, you'll get a team. It's all good. We're going to give you, you're going to get a better team. Don't worry. We're just going to move to Nashville. He just did what most owners do who want to move, moved. It just works. Move it. Just like Mark Davis moved from Oakland, just like Al Davis moved from Oakland to L.A. and then back to Oakland again. Sometimes franchises just go, that's enough. We're done. We didn't get a stadium or something else or whatever. We got a better deal. Bye. And they leave and they take their history with them. Is it fair that Bum Phillips, who's a beloved coach in Houston back in the 70s, led them to, what, three AFC title games? I think maybe three or two AFC title games. I remember one of them particularly. But that Tennessee is going to have a ceremony to honor him? That Nashville is going to have a ceremony to honor him? That the people who are season ticket holders are going to cheer for a coach that has nothing to do with the franchise in Nashville at all, when he really should belong to Houston? And and that is where he's most famous.
Hasn't there been like controversy or an uproar whenever the Titans have flirted with the idea of they're using Oiler throwback uniforms as well?
The Texans. There have been talk about the Texans using Houston Oiler throwback uniforms.
I thought the Titans were going to flirt with that. You going with the throwback uniforms. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. I don't know if you're wrong. I just don't know. I know when the Texans tried to do it, the Titans stopped them. Right? The Texans were like, "Well, can we do it?" No. You can't, because that why you can get one, I guess, on the sort of extra market.
I think once you change your team name, your logo, and you give a whole new identity to yourself, you should forfeit the right of
imaging. Like, right? I mean, the state of Tennessee has two teams that took their teams from somewhere else.
Yeah.
They have the Tennessee Titans and the Memphis Grizzlies, used to be the Vancouver Grizzlies. Now, I don't know how attached people in Vancouver were to the Grizzlies, but if they got a team and they wanted to honor somebody that played for the Vancouver Grizzlies back in the day, would Memphis go, "Nope, that's our guy. He's part of our franchise history." The NHL, Carolina Hurricanes, used to be the Hartford Whalers, right? The Winnipeg Jets used to be the Atlanta Thrashers. The Phoenix Coyotes, Arizona Coyotes now, used to be the Winnipeg Jets. So there's all sorts of stuff going on. But yeah, if a franchise moves and changes their name, right? But it's more than that. Look, I get it. There's a side of the story I get. I get that the Adams family is saying, you know, Amy Adams Shrunk is saying, It's our team. We own this team. It's part of our family. All of this, everything that we're doing is to honor things that our family has had. Yeah, we may have fired Bum Phillips after going into the playoffs in 1980, but he's still part of this team and this organization's family, the larger picture. Okay? But at the same time, I know his attachment to Houston is real. Like, his attachment to that is where his impact was made the most. In that city with the citizens there who grew up in that town with the Oilers, who were really good back in the day. Now, look, Jeff Fisher, I've had my problems with Jeff Fisher, right? Mr. 7-9, Mr. 8-8. But he did lead the team to the Super Bowl. He's the winningest coach in franchise history. And he navigated the team from Houston to Memphis to Nashville, which is very difficult to do. When players are finding new places to live and they got to go here and they're playing in front of, he navigated all that. So he's a real part of that team from the Super Bowl standpoint and all that. That makes sense. But not Bum Phillips. And it's not like Bum Phillips was on staff the first year you were in Memphis. Because remember, they went to Memphis first, then Nashville. He wasn't anywhere near the organization. And so that's a hotly contested debate right now, whether or not this should happen. But you know what? Here's the overriding thought, though. Unless the Texans are going to petition and say, we want to put him in our ring of fame, even though he has nothing to do with our team, but he represents our city and we represent the city, Bum Phillips won't get honored in a ring of fame if people here in Nashville who are siding with the fact that he didn't do anything for the current Tennessee Titans get their way. Phillips should be recognized.
That's the end of the argument right there, though.
You know?
I mean, he had nothing to do with the Tennessee version of this football team. Whether it was Memphis Oilers, Tennessee Oilers, Nashville Oilers, it didn't matter. I mean, he had nothing. He never made the trip.
No. But he needs to be honored in some capacity by some team. I mean, he was a really good coach. He was fun.
Yeah, no, that's true. Because Houston can't, right?
Yeah, my favorite quote of all time when it's a very famous quote, but it's still my favorite. When he was asked why, you know, Earl Campbell couldn't run a mile, he says, "Well, when it's third and a mile, I'll be worried."
Yeah. I'll give him the ball.
I'll give him the ball, right? There you go. Earl, you know. But I know these teams move and it stinks because you have more connection. When your team leaves and another city is like, "He's ours." And you're like, "No, he's not." I want more of what the Ravens and the Browns did. Like, I want more of that. All of the Oilers' history should belong to the Texans, right? They should belong to the Texans. I know the Adams want to hold on to it. That's fine. But it's part of the Houston sports lore. It's not part of the organizational lore that's now in Tennessee.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
We're still shaking our head at these 1988 hits from a Throwback Thursday. Oh, goodness, there's a monkey on you. Oh, give me a break. What a weird time. Gabe Blacks joins us USA Today. We're going to talk some Major League Baseball as it heads into the second half of the season. Progressive Guest Line. Progressive to make it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. How are you, Gabe?
Doing well. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. All right, Rob Manfred said some of the changes that were made due to COVID are not going to be implemented going forward. The runner on second base and extra innings, seven-inning doubleheaders. But in your thought, should some of them stick around?
I think it's probably good to get rid of them. I mean, I think I'm kind of a fan of maybe how about a nine-inning and seven-inning doubleheader?
That's a good idea.
Split the difference a little bit. I mean, it ends up, yeah, I think the Mets have managed it's somewhere around 40 innings less than their competitors this year because of, they've run into a lot of I believe the Nationals had a COVID breakout at the start of the year, so they've, and then a bunch of rain delays and stuff. So that can kind of add up over the course of time and just affect the, kind of the overall calculus of things. So, and, you know, then you're not punishing fans quite as much of having to watch, a little bit less of a game than what they're paying for. So, I think it just kind of makes sense to try to sort of get back to, what we might have considered normal back in the day.
All right. Well, let's look ahead to the second half of the season. Ronald Acuna Jr. being out for the Atlanta Braves, who are four back of the Mets in the NL East. These injuries, when they happen and then you get the done for the season, have such a tremendous blow in baseball because a lot of injuries are 6 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever, and you're hoping that they come back. But in this case, he's not. Atlanta was a team tinkering on the outside anyway. What does this do for the Braves?
Yeah, that's really tough. I mean, obviously, probably one of the top three to five players in the game, but I think, pitching was probably going to make or break them anyway, not to diminish at all what the loss of Acuna is going to do. But, they're still pretty potent. I'm not entirely counting them out, especially if, the Ian Andersons of the world really, kind of step into the second half in a real dominant mode from the mound. But, it's interesting. That division to me is still kind of fascinating. I mean, are the Mets going to play back to the pack? I don't think they're going to run away with it. Can they maintain, the pace they set in the first half? Yeah. They could certainly play to that level, but, I just don't see them running away with it. So it still strikes me as like a, 85 win kind of thing probably wins the division. So there's still time for these teams to kind of change the arc that they've been on. But, man, that's going to be really tough for the Braves to do that without Acuna.
Going to the Central and Milwaukee leading that division, and this is a team with tremendous pitching, but batting is left to be desired. Can a team hang on to pitching that long? Do they need the offense to come around? Can pitching hold out all the way through to the end?
I think it can. I really do. I mean, I'm always a big fan of any team with a big three starting rotation. I mean, when you're 60% of the time you're going out and handing the ball to a guy that can shut the other team down, especially in this era when so few teams don't have that, that's such a huge advantage. I think if they're to do anything, kind of meaningful in the playoffs and beyond, yeah, they got to get Christian Yelich going. There's, no way around that. But, when you're talking Burns, Woodruff, and Peralta, I don't think they'll be caught in that division. I think there's just too many other flaws with all the other teams. The Reds, potent, but, again, you just kind of don't trust that bullpen ultimately. So, I think the Brewers are definitely the real deal and, may end up with, probably the second best record among division winners.
It does bode well. If you're a team that needs Milwaukee to lose 8 out of 10, it's not likely to happen with those three guys in the rotation.
Absolutely, yeah. Whereas other teams, going back to the Mets, like, man, they just got to stay healthy above all. And I just, you you know, as a baseball fan, you hope that, you know, Jacob DeGrom can kind of, you know, avoid those nagging injuries that kind of curtailed him a bit in the first half, but also avoid any, you know, any major ones too that would really set them back quite a bit. You know, he hasn't pitched a ton of innings. I think he still pitched enough to be kind of the, you know, the runaway Cy Young Award winner. But you know, if he's still kind of having these five and, you know, five inning outings to kind of preserve, you know, and then keep himself together, you know, it's interesting. You just hope there's nothing underlying there that might pop up in the second half.
Let's go to the West. How surprising is San Francisco? I mean, when you looked at the preseason and you saw the division, how tough it could be, here's San Francisco with the best record. Are they holding on like a race car driver ahead of a pack with charging cars, or are they a legit leader in that division?
That's what it's felt like all year, but man, it's pretty legit. You know, It's just wild. You know, I mean, I think, you know, Kevin Gausman has been so dominant that you expect him to keep it up. You know, Anthony Desclafani, like, he's, you know, he's out there shutting down teams. You know, it's unbelievable the step forward he took this year. You know, I would have said that, you know, the Dodgers will just simply gradually overtake them, and you could take that to the bank. But now I'm not entirely sure. You know, obviously now the Dodgers with a lot of questions on the pitching end, so the Giants might just creep back to, you know, and just hold on there, and they're going to get Evan Longoria back, you know, and it, Brandon Crawford having an MVP caliber season. It's just remarkable. So, yeah, I'm definitely not counting them out, although I just think, you know, the Dodgers, the way they overwhelm you in the aggregate, I'm kind of still expecting them to win the division, but it's I don't think we're going to see that happen because the bottom fell out for the Giants.
Gabe Lax joining us USA Today on baseball heading into the second half of the season. And before we get to some teams of the American League, with the All-Star game and its celebration of baseball and sort of the pageantry that has been around that game, with players deciding, I got a nagging injury, I don't want to go, can baseball do something about that? Because can baseball negotiate something about a mandatory appearance in the All-Star game if you get voted in?
Well, it's on the books that you have to have a documented, you know, reason, but the language is pretty fuzzy, you know, and so if, you know, if Yadier Molina says that his legs hurt or they're sore, you know, I mean, you know, then it's a matter of his team doctor providing a note essentially to back that up. So it's tough, you know. It was, it's crazy to think how good the Astros have been this year, and they were literally invisible at this All-Star game. The greater concern going forward is, you know, it is a grind of a week. There is a ton of obligations, you know, and it's fun. It's kind of a big sugar rush for these guys. They legitimately do enjoy it, but you know, I think the bigger concern is, you know, when, as the Vlad Juniors and Fernando Tatis Jr. and this generation of players start to get into that, I've done this five or six times and I'm kind of jaded now mode. That's going to be kind of a bummer, because it was cool to see how fired up they were this week. But you know, they're going to get older and they're going to, you know, maybe someday value a few days break too. So it's tricky, and you know, maybe I don't know if that's so significant as to come to the fore in these collective bargaining negotiations, but it's unfortunate. You kind of understand it, but it definitely went to a certain extreme this year. Although maybe you give guys a little bit of a pass just because I guess the totality of you know, the last 15 months with playing through COVID and all that kind of stuff. But hopefully it becomes less of an issue in coming years.
Over in the American League, Boston is leading the AL East, but the Yankees are 8 games back, and they've lost all 6 games to the Red Sox. There's something about the Yankees. I love their lineup, but I don't like the way they're playing. What is missing from what the Yankees are doing?
Yeah, I mean, very little continuity. You know, the starting pitching is okay, but it's not quite good enough to kind of, you know, allow them to stack wins in a very coherent fashion. The offense obviously has been a huge mess. I was just startled to see, kind of look a little deeper at DJ LeMahieu and his numbers this year. just way off. You know, he's basically a league average hitter this year after leading the AL and OPS and adjusted OPS last year, you know, won a batting title. It's hard to figure out what's going on with him because a lot of his batted ball data is okay. You know, it looks kind of normal. So I don't know if he's been hit into some bad luck or whatnot, but, you know, he's, you know, if guys like, you know, Sanchez and Stanton and Judge may come and go with regard to health and also consistency. Yeah, they've really just relied so much on LeMahieu being the machine, and he's been far from that this year. And that's I think that's just exacerbated a lot of the woes that some of their hitters can run into now and again.
Okay, but the White Sox, they were a loaded team before when Tony La Russa took the job, and people were wondering how he would relate to the younger players. Obviously, the record is fantastic. Have you noticed a Tony La Russa difference, a different way that he's been dealing with a 2021 group of athletes than, you know, 30 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, it's the one thing that I find interesting is, like, you know, that we, and this kind of stuff has been harder to surface in a year when, you know, the media doesn't have access to the clubhouse. But
right.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, are they winning out of spite? You know, sometimes you forget it's not the worst thing in the world if the players do hate the manager.
Good point. Yeah.
But, you know, So much was made of these various kerfuffles, you know, like, you know, with those comedy made about Lance Lynn and such. It's like, and you think about it, you go, man, those guys go back more than a decade. You know, it could just be like an old couple arguing, you know, in a way that they might, you know. So it's, I think we will eventually kind of have a good feel for what, you know, the what's and why's of the La Russa concept. But, you know, he's definitely not hurting them. I know he's made some tactical errors, but at the same time, you know, you just look at the team and you look at who they've been missing and you look at the record and you can't say that he's been a negative. I mean, that just seems impossible. Like if you were just to put any old manager in there, I don't think they'd have five more wins. So it's, you know, he's still definitely got it going. And, I think, you know, it will be really interesting to get them into the playoffs and put him and the whole, you know, the whole operation under a greater microscope and kind of see how they do respond to him and see if he's as sharp as he's ever been when the, you know, kind of the scrutiny of the postseason comes around.
Gabe, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so very much. And looking ahead to the second half of the season.
Okay, sounds good. We'll be around. Thanks so much.
You got it. You bet. Gabe Lax, USA Today, joining us to talk some baseball on a Progressive guest line. Progressive, quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Throwback Thursday, 1988. Maybe 1988 wasn't a great year for music.
We're just two-stepping it right now, right? Or not even two-stepping. It's just like lift your feet up and you're slowly turning around.
I'm at the dance asking Kim Graves to dance with me. Getting all scared. And she says yes, and I'm all like excited. I'm 15-year-old me.
Kind of holding her closer, and you're going, right. Wait, I'm feeling something different.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too close.
Yes.
Right? I'm just, yeah, this is too
much. Upper half
right
close,
now.
Lower half kind of pushed away.
Right, a little bit. Don't want to, you know, that's the way I am right now. That's what I'm thinking about with these ridiculous songs that we've been playing.
Yeah, and the chaperones coming around to separate us.
It's you know what, Ron? It's been a weird throwback Thursday because a lot of times the excitement of our subject marries the enjoyment of the music. This is one where the excitement of the Throwback Thursday comes with crappy love ballads that just should never have existed in the world of music.
You should have seen some of the ones that ended up on the cutting room floor.
I can only imagine.
It was disappointing.
Yikes.
There's just so much time that we have you know, to fit some of these songs in, and I couldn't do it.
Celebrating Die Hard with this on our Throwback Thursday.
Wasn't this in the movie?
Yeah, wasn't it in the movie when he was walking through the glass on bare feet?
When he was riding
I have a machine
out,
gun.
When he was riding out ho ho ho.
That's right. When he was riding out ho ho ho. Right. Is this in the background? Amazing, amazing. Good talk with Gabe Lax on some Major League Baseball. I don't know. I want to ask this question real quick as we close out this hour, because I asked him, should Major League Baseball actually do something about these athletes and that are not going, who get voted? Do they have to? Can the All-Star Game survive? Like, if you have a bunch of, there's always going to be stars that will go. Not all the stars are going to say no to this.
Right.
Right. There's a lot of players that like it and will go to it. Not everyone's turning. It's not the Pro Bowl, where the Pro Bowl, if you gave the players an opportunity not to go to the Pro Bowl,
they're not going.
I'm not going to the Pro Bowl. Done. But like we were talking about,
that's when we
started
to
yesterday.
Have all those off-season surgeries all of a sudden. Like,
right.
He played hurt all this time. Yeah, got that, you know, bum phalange.
We talked about this yesterday. The NBA All-Star Game is such a party and is such an event. Players go when they're not even voted, right? They just go for the weekend because it's so awesome. It's a chance to really let loose, and you're rich and young, and clubs are open forever, and it's just a great time. Baseball doesn't really have that. You know, baseball doesn't have that feeling like, man, you should go and hang out with all these guys. They want to stay home with their families and chill, but there'll always be stars at the All-Star Game. You're never going to go to that second level to fill the roster.
And football has it, but that's Super Bowl week.
That's Super Bowl week, right? Right. So I don't think they really have to, but it does. It is a bad look when the entire Astros go, nah, we ain't going, bye, thanks, we're all hurt. See ya. Yeah, that's not a good look. Or when Mookie Betts goes, I get a home run Sunday, but you know what? I can't make it. I'm hurt. That could drive Rob Manfred a little bit crazy. We're going to continue on as we fill in for Jake Asman here on a Throwback Thursday. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.